Welcome everyone to Spotlight. I'm Jennifer Thomas, and today we have the pleasure of interviewing Jim Carmillo, who we all know and love as Jock. I know Jock has a very interesting and really pretty exciting life to tell us about. And with that introduction, Jim, I'll ask you to just take the floor and run with it. Tell us a little bit about your childhood and your coming of age, and we'll go from there.
Well, as I knew the questions were going to be tough, that's a tough one to know where to start. I guess you could say I had a pretty rough start, as I was an unwanted bastard child whose mother gave him away at the age of 9 days old. And I was adopted by a young couple that couldn't have any children, and raised during the Depression. We were very, very poor. We were hungry, on welfare. They called it relief back then. And I had to drop out in the second year of high school to economy, and went to the 3C camps. That stands for Civilian Conservation Corps, which was one of Franklin Roosevelt's programs in order to get the country out of the recession and to get us kids off the street. One of the best years I ever spent in my life, by the way. I went in 116 pounds, come out 162. Regular meals, regular living conditions. Learned how to live with others since I was an only child. I took a few beatings, too, to learn how to live with the rest of the boys. But I did learn. I don't know if you want to ask me some more questions to lead me on.
Well, I think we could probably talk to you all day long, Jock, but so you were obviously born sighted, and thank goodness life was tough enough for you. So what next, Jock? What was the next major event or episode in your life?
Well, like I said, like you said, I was born sighted, and I lost my first eye when I was a little boy chopping kindling wood. Start fires with, and we didn't even have money to go to a doctor, so that eye was blind. And later on, I drove truck. I was a truck driver, long-distance truck driver, which I should not have been doing with one eye. However, I faked my doctor's physical and got on the road, and then I went blind all of a sudden, and I had two tractors and trailers that I, well, the bank owned, and I owed more on them than they was worth, and the bank didn't want to take them back, so they'd give me a chance to continue on in the trucking business. So I had to hire another driver. I was driving one, and I hired a driver for the other one. And from then on, I just started growing in the trucking business.
And how old were you at this point, Jock, where you've just left us with, at the time you hired your driver?
29. I was 29. I was married. I had two little girls, and my wife was pregnant with twins, and we were living with my mother and dad, and I had these two trucks that I said that I owed more on than they were worth. The bank didn't even want to take them back, so they gave me a chance to try to make it, and I did.
Well, where did this all happen? Where were you living at the time, Jock?
In a little town southwest of Pittsburgh called Washington, Washington, Pennsylvania. And, of course, being in that area, my main commodity was hauling steel. I was a steel hauler all over the eastern half of the United States.
Okay, so here we have a pretty ambitious fella and a nice little family and babies on the way. And what happened next?
Okay, what was that last question, Jennifer? I'm a little nervous.
Oh, I was just saying you were a pretty ambitious fella and had a nice family and babies on the way and your business was really starting to thrive. What happened next?
Well, as I said, I was practically forced to stay in the trucking business, and I lucked out and met the right people at the right time at the right place and became very, very, very successful. And eventually I sold my trucking business in 1969 for a lot of money. And that's how I wound up in Florida. In 1971, I came to Florida, where I went into the real estate business, by the way.
And you were still sighted or had good vision in your remaining eye at this time, correct?
No, I'm sorry, I did not make that clear. I only had two trucks when I went blind, when I hired that driver. The second driver, I was blind. And there was nothing for me to do other than dispatch the two trucks, try to make a living for three families with two trucks. And that was practically impossible, so I started buying trucks and hiring trucks and just started growing in the trucking business and became very successful at it. I didn't realize that apparently I had leadership qualities until after I went blind, and that's truly helped me in growth.
So that's really a fascinating story, Jock, and your life story really is one of rags to riches. You should be very proud of yourself. How did you go blind, Jock?
Breaking up a fight between two of my friends, and the funny thing about it is I do not remember even getting hit. In fact, I didn't have any marks or bruises. When I went to the eye doctor the next morning, by the way, that was New Year's Eve, my fifth wedding anniversary, and I was halfway with a load from Newport, Kentucky to Union, New Jersey. Washington was just about halfway. And of course, I had to hire a driver to take the truck the rest of the way. But I broke up this fight, and we just came from a movie. We went to a movie, and we went to the regular truck driver's hangout. And I was on my first beer, so I was not drunk or intoxicated, but we was in the dance floor where we danced, and my two friends got into a fight, and me and the fellow who was with me broke up the fight. He picked one of them up, and I picked the other one up. As I said before, I don't remember ever getting touched because we weren't in the fight at all. Sat down and reached for my beer, and I couldn't see it. That was the last I ever saw. Detached retina.
Wow. The luck of the draw, Jock. Well, now it's 1971. You've sold your business for a pretty penny. You've moved to Florida. Now what keeps Jock busy?
Well, I had taken a couple of trips to Florida before I left Pennsylvania and to look around. And I looked at real estate, and someone sent me to this real estate attorney who gave me some very good advice. And I had all this money I didn't know what to do with, and decided to come to Florida and get in the real estate business. So I started buying, building, and selling apartment houses. And I even made more money there than I did in the trucking business. I asked myself, why didn't I do this sooner? Then I answered my own question. I started the trucking business with brawn and guts and no money. But in the real estate business, you have to have money to start with. So that answered the question. And I got very lucky in there, in the real estate business also.
So have you basically retired now from the real estate business, Jock?
Yes. I retired, let's say, from the trucking business. I retired from the vending program. I retired from real estate. I'm one of those that retired about three or four times, and but I'm certainly retired now, and living happily ever after, I hope.
Well, now, I don't think we're going to let you retire from coordinating the Peeps Cabaret, though, sir. That's a ongoing job, we hope. You do a wonderful job of it. Let's back up a minute. You just mentioned the vending stand program. When? How long, and why did you leave?
Well, first of all, I came to Daytona. When I came to Florida, I went to Hollywood, Florida. That's where one of my mechanics' wives and some of the children lived. And that's what drew me to Hollywood, Florida, to start with. What drew me to Daytona, where I live today, is the rehab center. We have one of the greatest rehab centers in the country right here in Daytona Beach. So I came to the rehab center to get my GED. As I mentioned earlier, I'm a 10th grade dropout, but I never give up easily. It took me 40 years to get from 10th grade through 12th, but I made it. And I like Daytona, and Rose liked Daytona, so we just decided to come up here. And I had sold all my buildings and took all first mortgages right when everything was prime, interest rates were high, and Carter's appreciation of all the apartment houses I bought were and built were worth a lot more money than they cost me. So I just sold. First, we bought a motorhome. We bought a motorhome, and Rose, who never drove anything bigger than our little Hornet, that's what we came to Florida in, I taught her how to drive that motorhome, and we traveled all over the United States for 20 years. We had three motorhomes, traveled all over the United States. And then, of course, like I say, we came to Daytona to the rehab center. We liked it, and we decided to move here. And after I got my GED, I learned about the vending program. Just to have something to do, I decided to go into it. And I went through the program, and I took one of their white elephants, stand in Pensacola at the community college there in Pensacola. Actually, it was a cafeteria, but it was not a big enough business to run a whole cafeteria. It was more like a stand. We had a lot of room, and I spent 13 months there. And I guess two reasons why I left there. Number one, I really didn't need to do it, which makes it easy to quit when you want to quit. And the state was playing with my money. I didn't like that. I didn't have anything to do with what they were doing with my money. So I just quit. Came back to Daytona. And the teacher of the course asked me why didn't I protest. I told him I didn't want to fight for my money and work for it at the same time. But anyhow, he talked me into taking another stand. So I went to Lakeland, Florida, and spent a year in the state office building. Not quite a year, about 8 or 9 months, in the state office building in Lakeland. That was really a nice stand. We really made money there. But they still were playing with my money. And to prove the point about them playing with my money, long after I was out of there, long after I quit, some of the patrons put a class action suit in against the state. They won the settlement. And even though I was not involved, I got a check for $1,633. So I must have been right about them playing with my money.
Wow, that's very interesting in and of itself, Jock. Well, I've often heard you talk about your wife, Rose, with great affection. Tell us about Rose, where you met, and how you came to marry.
Well, first I want to say that's the best thing that ever happened to me. I met Rose at my bar. I forgot to mention, while I was in the trucking business, after I bought the coal mine where my dad used to work, across the street there was a tavern where my dad used to go to, and I used to meet him when I was a little boy to get the change out of his pay envelope. I bought that beer garden also, tavern, and I called it the Roadrunners. Significantly, I'm on Roadrunner right now, Roadrunner cable. But this was way back in the 60s, and Roadrunner was another symbol. I bought the Roadrunner Tavern and used to cash my driver's checks and get some of my money back, and also the people at Washington Steel. Well, I met Rose at the Roadrunners. I knew then that that was my wife to be. I was still married, but it was on the rocks, and I already had her picked out, and unknowingly, I guess she had me picked out. I didn't know that at the time.
And did you and Rose have children together also?
We were a little too old for that. We were beyond the children-bearing age. You know, one thing I failed to mention, my youngest daughter, I'm an old jitterbug, and one of the, at the bar, and I usually sat at the end of the bar. I never bartended. I hired bartenders. One of the ladies that I knew very well and used to jitterbug quite frequently came in and asked me for a jitterbug, and we jitterbugged, and I went back and sat down. My youngest daughter says, you know, Dad, there's a lady here with Mary that's just sitting there sort of nonchalantly in the background, like, maybe you ought to ask her to dance. That lady was Rose.
Aha, great story. Do you have grandchildren, Jock?
Yes, I have 4 grandchildren left. I did have 5. I lost one with my son in an automobile accident. And I have 9 great-grandchildren. And by the way, James O'Camilla III had a son named him James O'Camilla IV, and his wife nicknamed James the King James IV. Isn't that cute?
It is. It is, Jock. Well, other than all the great times you have on FTP helping us, and I hope just enjoying yourself, what else keeps you busy nowadays?
Reading. I'm an avid reader. I read. You know, that's all I used to do after I retired was read until I got on the Internet. The Internet has stole some time from my reading, but happily so. And I'm so glad I found this program. It's such a... You know, before that, I was on IRC, and I never could type very well, but by the time I got to be a fairly decent typist, then the voice check comes on. So, that's life.
I'm happy to say that one of the persons that you have so wonderfully showed us her talents is here with us today listening. And it's a one thing I know about you, Jock, is you're a wonderful and loyal friend. I've heard you talk about and just different things you've talked about with people you're close to. You're a very loyal friend, and I think that says an awful lot. But Peg is with us, and happy to see you, Peg. Well, Jock, would you like to share with us any ideas or experiences you had going blind, adjusting to blindness?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I had these 2 trucks. I was practically forced to stay in the trucking business, and that kept me pretty well tied up, made me almost forget I was blind. I had to make a living for my children, and I just, you know, kept myself busy, and about life in itself. I know it's strange for people to hear me say this, but if I had my whole life to live over again, I wouldn't change a thing. I'm a firm believer that everything happens for the best. And by the way, Peg is going to be our MC Wednesday night. She was unable to do it before because her boy plays football on Friday nights. So that's one of the advantages of moving to Wednesday night.
Oh, that'll be wonderful, especially if we get to hear more of her music, because she certainly is a beautiful, beautiful vocalist. Well, Jock, is there anything else you'd like to say before we open the floor to questions? I really need to let everyone know that Jock saved the day for us. We have some folks from Singapore who are going to be interviewed today, and due to technical difficulties, that didn't happen. So almost literally at the 11th hour last night, Jock agreed to fill in today, and I appreciate that so much.
And I am nervous. But to answer one of your questions, Jennifer, I love people, and that makes it easy. I really love people.
Well, and you attract people, so it's just great to have you with us, Jock. And I will open the floor to questions. Jock really has lived a very, well, just exciting life. Real fast-paced, and there's some stories that we probably won't ever hear on in an interview that I know would be interesting to everyone, but for now I'm going to open the floor to questions.
I would like to say one more thing, Jennifer. I have my story in 3 excerpts that I'd be more than willing to send to anybody who wants it. If they request, I'll send them my story if they're interested in reading it.
Okay, great. And you can get with them privately, exchange emails or whatever. Does anyone have any questions for Jock?
Well, I thought maybe Jock could tell us a little bit about I remember I read a story a little bit, and there was something about a little medical scare with your ticker there, Jack. You want to fill us in on that a little bit? I think people would be interested.
I think I know what Terry's referring to. He has teased me about it a lot. While living in Florida, down in Hollywood, Florida, and having had good health most all of my life, one day I was laying on the bed, I just wakened up, and I moved my left arm, and I had the most excruciating pain I ever felt. And Rose and Mabel, one of our tenants in one of our apartments, was fixing dinner, because her husband was coming home from work, and the four of us were going to have dinner together. And I was laying on the bed, just in my shorts, and when I moved my arm, I really had a terrific pain. So I didn't want to holler right away. I waited a minute, didn't move a muscle, and it quit hurting. I moved my left arm again, and oh, what pain. I mean, it was really bad. I did that two or three times, just waited and then moved it again. Finally, I just had to holler for help, so I hollered for Rose and Mabel, and they came in the room, and I just lay there flat like a board and still, and scared to death. And I told them what was happening to me. And of course, I didn't make them feel very good. They were scared too. And I think we're about to call 911. And I don't know, I decided to move my arm again. And just as I moved my left arm, Mabel burst out laughing. I mean, she started laughing hysterically. Then Rose started laughing. And here's what happened. I had fell asleep with some bubble gum in my mouth, and somehow the bubble gum came out of my mouth, rolled down across my chest, and got down into my armpit, and it was in the hair, my armpit. So if anybody must have a heart attack, that's the kind to have, because I can laugh about it later.
Jack, it was a great interview, and my company's coming. They just called me, so I'm going to have to go. But that's a wonderful story. Golly. I really enjoyed hearing about you, and I wish I would have remembered that it was you that was being interviewed today. I would have announced it for sure on my show, but I couldn't remember who it was. Anyway, that was wonderful. Jennifer, you did a great job, and I'm so glad I got a chance to hear the bulk of it. I'm just so thrilled.
Jack, I have a question.
Shoot, my friend Steve.
Jack, I read in your story something about you seeing a young kid boxing around a parking lot. Could you tell us more about that?
Yes, Steve. I was back in my truck driving days. I had hauled a load out of Chicago to Louisville. I hauled a load of canned goods from Campbell's Soup to a distributor in Louisville, Kentucky, and our terminal, I was working for Midwest Emery at the time, our terminal was across the river into Jeffersonville, Indiana. And I pulled in our regular trucking lot, parking lot, and got my log book out and my papers to go into the office to check in to see about a return load. And these two little black boys were running around the yard, just running around in the yard. And one of them was, the littlest one, was swinging his arm, waving his arm, hollering, "I'm the greatest, I'm the greatest, I'm the greatest." And the big boy was a little bit bigger, running along behind him saying, "He's the greatest, he's the greatest." And when they saw me, you know, after I'd left the truck and walking towards the office, this little boy ran up in front of me, starts swinging his arms and saying, "I'm the greatest, I'm the greatest, I'm going to be the next heavyweight champion of the world." So with tongue-in-cheek, I said, "Well, what is your name so I'll remember it when I hear it again?" His name was Cassius Clay.
That is just incredible. Because he's one of my big-time idols. But I'd like to hear that story. Thank you.
That is a wonderful story, and I agree with you, Steve. I'm a big Muhammad Ali fan. Any other questions for Jock?
Hey, Jock, this is Tech Tiger. Where'd you get your computer training? Was that down at Daytona?
Yes, yes. A guy by the name of Dave Wasco, if you're familiar with the instructors down here. Yes, a little of it. Most of it is self-taught. That's why I don't know very much. But I got the basics back in the DOS days. I didn't get any Windows training at all at the rehab center. I was there too soon for that.
Hi, Jack. I forget what I was going to ask. Oh, no, I know. About that bubblegum story, did, when it rolled down your chest, did it go inside your armpit, or did it go just, like, on the armpit and it stuck there? You know, how how'd you get it out? You know, I mean, did it hurt when you took it out? Did it hurt when you, you know, was it pulled out or something?
Yes, honey, it went right into the hair, into my armpit. That's what was making the pain. Every time I moved my arm, it would pull a few more hairs out. And if you realize how sensitive that part of your body is, and how they got it out, the only way, they cut all the hair out. And the bubble gum came with it.
Ow, man, that must have hurt. That must have really hurt.
Yeah, another interesting thing, Jack, that I read, and Peg just mentioned the text window as well, that I remember. I guess you met somebody's wife down at a fame in a little restaurant or cafe down in Pennsylvania, I believe Perry's wife, was that right?
I didn't quite get that question. Would you rephrase that again, Perry?
Yeah, you Peg wanted you to talk about it. You either met Perry Como or Perry Como's wife in a place down in Pennsylvania, if I remember right reading it in your story. Was that right?
Yes, that's another little story if you want to hear it. First of all, me and my to-be first wife was at the Moose Lodge dancing when Phil Lewis, an orchestra leader from Cannonsburg who played for the Moose Dances, I was a member of the Moose Lodge then, brought this barber up to sing for us. And when he sang, I told Bert then, that's the name of my first wife, that guy's going to make it. He's going to be he's a winner. He's going to be number one. Then I went away to the state of Washington where I worked on the atomic bomb plant for a year. And when I came home between jobs, because the next job was a rocket plant in Charlestown, Indiana, and I had a 90-day furlough and a lot of money to spend. So I had this friend, George Lopen, I used to play pool with, and we used to gamble and chase the girls. We went down to Meadowlands Lodge to get a spaghetti dinner. They had one of the best spaghetti dinners in that part of the country. And back in those days, they cooked it fresh. You ordered and you sat there and you waited till they cooked your dinner. Back then, you could put a quarter in a jukebox and get six numbers. They were a nickel apiece or six for a quarter. And I'm standing there at the jukebox picking out six numbers when this waitress came over. She said, you need some help there? I said, yeah, go ahead, pick out a couple. And she picked out a couple Perry Como's. And he was just starting then, just getting in on the record machines. I said, you must like that guy. She said, of course I do. He's my husband.
Wow, that's great.
Jack, I have a question that I don't know if you can even answer, but you've lived most of the 20th century, and that's gone now. We're in a new century, and your show no signs really of slowing down at all. I mean, how is it to know that you've lived through so much history, and almost a whole century, and you're still vibrantly alive and walk 2 miles a day and get up at 5:30 in the morning? That's pretty amazing to me. Maybe you'll find a question in there. If not, then don't worry about it.
Well, I can say this, Steve. I love life. That helps. And two, I believe in quality as well as quantity. If I'm going to live to be a ripe old age, I want it to be quality life. I want to enjoy it. I don't want to be sickly. Of course, nobody does. But I try to help myself by exercising, eating right, living right and loving people and try to get people to love me, because we just don't live in this world alone.
I'm not sure if it was mentioned during your interview, Jack, but you might fill people in of what your present age is. I'm not sure if you talked about that or not.
Well, I can tell you a little story about that. I'm 80 years old, but, you know, my nickname is Jock, which is really the initials for my name, James Orville Camilla, Jock, J-O-C. Sometimes some of the young ladies get the wrong opinion of that nick and do a little flirting with me, and you know what? By the time I get around to telling them I'm happily married and that I'm 80 years old, I get dropped like a hot potato. Can you imagine that?
Before we close, I will take a few more questions if anyone has them. I think we probably could talk to Jock all day. But before we close, I always have to thank Becky for coordinating Spotlight, and Dennis for recording and doing such a wonderful job of editing. And they're really the two folks that make this event happen. And coming very soon, you'll be able to click on Galaxy of Stars and bring up all interviews that we've done and listen to them at your leisure. So if you've missed any, you'll have that opportunity. This is last call, I guess. Any questions?
Jack, I may be putting you on the spot here. I've read your story, and it's great, and I think everyone should. It's very interesting and well done. Not bad for a truck driver. Tell us a story that's not in your story, one I haven't heard.
Well, Steve, that's a tough one. There's a lot of things that's not my story. You know, I wrote that story strictly from memory and without any notes, and every day I think of something I forgot, left out. So I wouldn't know where to start. I know there's a lot more to it that's 80 whole years. That's a long time. And I started out from the very beginning, and up until 98, I haven't written any since then. Well, I wrote a couple of excerpts. But I'm hard-pressed right now to come up with anything new. I may write about... we took 5 cruises into the Caribbean. I may write something about it. They were pretty interesting later on.
Jack, how did you get your first truck? Were you working? Did you earn enough money to maybe buy an old piece of junk? Or how did you purchase your first truck?
Well, I was working in a feed mill. I had an old green 39 Packard. And when I was working at the feed mill, this feed mill had 3 new Dodge trucks. Back then, they were rationed. You couldn't go buy a truck anytime you wanted. You had to put an order in, and you had to have a special reason for getting one. And the prices were frozen. That's one of the reasons why there was a shortage. It was after the war, and the supply could not keep up with the demand. So I took the truck up to the Dodge dealer for the guy I was working for to get serviced. And just for the heck of it, because I'm waiting around with nothing to do, I just signed my name on the list to get a truck. Sure, I would never get one. I was sure I would never get one. So not only was the price frozen, but businesses were paying under the table to get ahead of people in line. So sure enough, I got called one day, and they said, your new truck is in. It was a 1-ton Dodge pickup truck. Said, your truck is in, and did you want it? I didn't have any money. I was working for $40 a week, and I had that Packard. And I said, sure, I want it. They said, well, but I said, I can't pick it up right today. They said, we'll give you a week. Otherwise, we got to give it to the next person. I said, okay, I'll get it. And I sold my green Packard for the down payment, and I financed it at the bank. First time I ever financed anything. I was pretty young. And I paid $1,310 for a one-ton Dodge pickup truck, $1,310. And I drove it around a little while, and one day this guy that I met when I was driving truck for Beatty Trucking had bought a brand new Ford 1.5-ton truck, brand new. It didn't even have a bed on it. And he was a farmer, and he needed a truck. And we was starting to pass each other on a one-lane road, and he stopped, and I stopped. We're talking out the window. You know how guys can do. He says, "Boy," he says, "I just picked this truck up from the Ford dealers today." He says, "And it's not what I wanted, but I couldn't get anything else. I'd like to have what you got right there." I said, "Well, I'd like to have your truck." He said, "Well, how would you trade even?" He said, "I paid $1,600 for my truck, and it's brand new, but it don't have a bed on it." I said, "Well, I would like to trade you, but I have to go see what the bank will say about that. I don't own it. They got the title." So I went to the bank, and they said, "Sure, they'll trade, because the equity in the Ford was worth more than the equity in the Dodge." So that's how I got my first 1.5-ton truck. And I immediately took it to Pittsburgh to the Army surplus dealer and got an Army truck bed put on it for $200. And I went into the junk business. And I really made some money in the junk business, but when it got cold and was snowing, I couldn't find junk. You couldn't haul junk because I went around junkyards and things like that. And so I heard about this trucking company that hired a straight job to haul LTLs. That means less than truckload shipments. Back in those days, again, the supply could not meet the demand, and people would take 10,000 pounds of steel even if they needed 50,000, but could only get 10. They would pay extra to have that hauled to their place. So that's how I started in the trucking business, with a 1.5-ton straight job. Later on, I moved to a white tractor to pull a company trailer. So things just sort of mushroomed from one thing to another. I could just never get it all in one lesson, I guess.
Jock, Peg has been trying to get the key, says she can't get the key, but that we should ask you about Amway.
She's got a good memory. I don't know how long ago it's been since she read that story. I know it's been well over a year. Yes, while I was in the trucking business and hauling steel and machinery and what have you, I picked up a piece of used machinery out of McMurray, Pennsylvania. That's between Washington and Pittsburgh. And haul it to, I always get these towns mixed up, either Adrian I think it was Adrian, Michigan. And my driver got there to the address that the machinery was shipped to, and it was an empty gas station. Just an empty gas station. So he called me on the phone, "Jim, what am I going to do? There's nobody here. How can I get this machinery unloaded?" I said, "Look around, see if there's a sign on the door, any telephone number, anything. If not," I said, "go to the nearest building, if there's any businesses around there, and ask if they know who has this gas station, who's running it, or what's happening." So I took care of that situation. Sometime later, he called me on the phone. He said, "Jim," he says, "we found the people." We called them on the phone, and they're here. And they called a wrecking truck to unload this big piece of machinery, but they don't have any money. And, you know, with big customers like U.S. Steel and General Motors and everything, we just billed that. They had to pay within the Interstate Commerce Commission regulations. They had to pay within 7 days. We didn't worry about that. But when we hauled for individuals, we needed to get our money right then. So he said, "What am I going to do? They don't have any money. They got the truck here to unload it." And they promised they would pay you within a week or so. I said, "Okay, put one of them on the phone." So I put this guy, he put this guy on the phone. I asked him, "Why, you know, what was the idea of ordering this machinery and not having any money to pay for it?" And here's what he told me. He said, "We just started a brand new company, and we were working out of our garage. And we need to expand, and we rented this gas station, and we're going to make some money, and we need this machinery very badly. And I promise you, if you'll let us unload this machinery, we will send you a check." I needed that truck. I needed that truck to go over to a steel place, McLeod Steel in Detroit, to pick up a load of steel for my customer in Washington, Pennsylvania, called Washington Steel. I needed that truck empty. So I decided to gamble. By the way, it was a $300 freight bill, $300+. And that's a lot of money back then. So I took the risk. And he called his company the American Way back then. I think they called it the American Way. Anyhow, it turned out to be Amway, and I wish they owed me $1 million now. They paid me, no problem at all.
That is a fascinating story, Jock. You, other than putting up that fight that caused your blindness, there are many other occasions that you were in the right place at the right time. A lot of wonderful memories.
Well, I could tell one about the coal mine where my dad used to work. He, my dad used to work at the coal mine called Tylerdale Mine, right on this Tylerdale section of Washington. And I used to meet him there when I was a little boy to get the change out of his envelope. And like I said, cross the street with him over to the tavern to get whatever change was left on the bar when he had a couple of beers. I wound up buying that coal mine. And that's a story in itself, meeting that guy who gave me a break to let me buy it.
Man, you've had an incredible life.
I'd say you summed it up pretty well, Bengal Daddy. Well, we're approaching our hour mark there, Jock, but is there any one significant incident in your life that you would say motivated you to go and do all that you have done despite the depression and your rocky beginnings in life, despite your blindness? Any one single incident that motivated or inspired you?
Yes, my step-parents, they motivated me because they were very poor and very uneducated, and my stepdad was a coal miner, and back in those days, the coal miners didn't work year-round, just domestic coal, and they didn't work in the summers at all. That's how we wound up on relief and so forth. But even when he made money, they squandered it. They never handled money properly. And from as far back as I can remember, I kept saying to myself, I don't want to live like this. I will not live like this. I will handle money better from day one that I can remember. And I've tried to achieve that.
Well, again, many, many thanks for stepping in at the last minute for us, Jock. Many, many thanks for all you do on the site. Not only your help with Cabaret, but your friendship and all that you add with your fascinating personality. And thanks again to Becky for coordinating and Dennis for recording. And thank you all for being here next Saturday.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to me. I do rattle on, but, you know, 80 years is a long time, and at least I have something to talk about. And I feel so fortunate to be so happy and so healthy and so financially independent at my age and enjoying life as much as I do. And like I said, I repeat, quality is every bit as important as quantity. So if I'm going to live another 20 years, which I'm shooting for, I want it to be healthy years. And I'm working on it right now.
I have a health tip for you. Don't chew bubble gum.
Or don't be like me and don't smoke.
Rose and I quit smoking 30 years ago. Cold turkey. And talking about, and Rose and I have always gotten along wonderfully, but talk about being in each other's throat when we first quit smoking, we certainly were that.
Great interview, Jock and Jennifer. Very nice job. I enjoyed it.